Begin Podfix Network transmission in 3, 2, 1.
Knight Rider, a shadowy flight into the dangerous world of a man that does not exist.
Might as well put on some music.
I am the voice of Knight Industry 2000's microprocessor, KITT for easy reference, a kit if you prefer. What would you like to hear?
Welcome to Ciampa and Klein, the Knight Rider Years, the podcast by two friends who share a love of classic 80s television. I am your host, David Ciampa.
I am your other host, Greg Klein.
Greg, let's hear it. Do it. Go. So Greg brought us these beers to apologize for something, but we're not going to tell you why he apologized. So you guys are just going to have to think about that.
We're drinking Rising Tide Copper Ale. The name of this beer is Ishmael.
It's really good, and it's low alcohol count, 4.9%. So it's nice. So we'll have a nice little heavenly.
Is that so? Low
odor.
Weird. Is low alcohol count a Sesame Street character? Hello, I am low alcohol count.
I'm sorry.
I am very low alcohol.
Give me a very low alcohol count, Greg. Hey, how has your week been?
It's happened. This is the time of year where I really realize I'm in the trenches of winter.
Yeah.
Like, January is okay, but still, it's just like a taste.
Now is the
time coming into February where I'm like, shit, we have like three more months of cold weather.
Because what is this? This episode drops on February 3rd. And so we're still recording in January at this point. But I got to tell you, January for the Ciampas has been a complete and utter dumpster fire.
Has it, David?
I want January to end in the worst possible way.
Ugh.
So you've heard the saga of my mother-in-law and my father-in-law.
Mm.
Father-in-law in the hospital for pneumonia. Mother-in-law trips and falls in the bathroom and breaks her hip and requires a partial hip replacement. So that happened. Add that to the fact that a week after they all got home from the hospital, my mother called me and told me that my dad was in the hospital.
Ooh.
For an intestinal blockage.
Oh.
He was in there for a week.
Wow.
Actually, I think as of this recording, I think he's home. But okay. He was in there for an entire week. He had to have surgery. He had to have all that cleared out. This is something apparently it's happened three or four other times. The last time was about 15 years ago. So that happened. So he's been in the hospital in boatloads of pain. Eva, this just gets so much bad, so much worse. Although Eva's positive because Eva's the light of everybody's day. So we had an EEG
mm-hmm.
for Eva to test her brain waves. So for those of you who don't know, our youngest daughter, Eva, was diagnosed with partial agenesis of the corpus callosum. That is a very scientific term for basically stating that she is missing the back half of her corpus callosum.
Mm-hmm.
It's been since she was born. We haven't had any imaging done in 5 years. So we brought her in for an EEG to kind of test and see what her brain was doing because she's been throwing up a lot at night for about 3.5-4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they think that it might be linked to seizures.
Hmm.
And so we're not sure if that is the case at this point. So they hooked her up. She had like all these, you know, like I think they said 72 electrodes like hooked to her head.
You showed me a photo.
I sent you the photo.
And I'm just going to say this as a comparison. She reminded me of when Marty meets Doc in 1954 for the first time.
Yes. She told the lab tech that she felt like a unicorn because all the wires were multicolored.
Mm-hmm.
So we went in for that appointment and came out with four more. to do over the next couple of months.
So you could get like a package deal.
So basically it was only a 2-hour snapshot of her brain. Like it was in the early morning. So it wasn't like a huge snapshot of what could possibly be doing. So they ordered a home kit.
Mm-hmm.
So we're actually going to hook her up to something for home so she can have like a 24-hour day, follow her around and see if we can see if there's anything happens. Cause what we were hoping is happening is that we hope that she throws up in the middle of the night so that we can so they can see what her brainwaves do, because that's what they think is triggering. Something is triggering her to vomit, which they think could be a sign of a seizure.
Interesting.
So we don't know. So we have that. Then we have a geneticist appointment in April. Then we have a follow-up MRI because she hasn't had any imaging done. And then we have a follow-up with the neurologist. So we have four more appointments in the next 2.5 months. So going into February, I'm trying to look at February with the most positive of attitudes and hope that the dumpster fire decides that it's time to just snuff that out.
Well, the one thing I can say that I have noticed is that the days are getting lighter.
I left work today. What time did I leave work? 5 o'clock. Mm-hmm. I could still see the sun.
I love that.
And it made me so happy to drive home.
And that's the other thing. We know that it's going to get lighter and lighter and lighter, and then there's going to come that day where we switch the clocks again, and it's going to be dark again.
I know.
And
we just need to do away with all of it. What I like, though, is when it's, because daylight savings is like in a month.
Yeah.
I think it's coming
I
up.
Think so.
I think it's coming up pretty soon. I'm going to look it up right now as we talk, because that's my favorite time of the year. Daylight savings, March 10th.
Okay.
So about a month or so from this point, a little over a month, five weeks. So I don't know. I'm looking forward to jumping into February, seeing the warmer weather. We're looking at some really good weather coming up in the next couple of days, like 40s and 50s. So I'm pretty happy about that.
I'm realizing I said something a moment ago. I said 1954.
That's the last four digits of our hotline.
It is. That's why. I was thinking of Back to the Future and Doc. It's 1955.
It was 55.
Right, but I said 54.
Did you?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, I wasn't paying
attention.
I'm
pretty sure I did.
Nope, definitely
so
wasn't.
I'm like, you know, because I'm checking myself. I don't want our listeners to be like, that guy's such a dick. He doesn't even understand pop culture.
I just want people to say that guy's such a dick.
It's true.
I don't want them questioning anything else, just the fact that Greg's a dick.
God, you ever listen to Champ and Klein, the Knight Rider years? That guy Klein is a real dick.
They suck. They're the worst. I don't want to listen to your show, which actually is cool because no one's listening anyway.
That's fine.
I'm totally cool with that.
One person's listening.
That's true, and we love him for it. Mm-hmm. We're going to get to his corner in a few minutes. Do you remember what we did last week?
Hell no.
We talked about our CB handles.
That's right.
From the last week's episode.
Ooh.
Do you remember who you were?
I was Grandpa Knuckles.
You were Grandfather Knuckles, and I was Danger Dog Coyote.
Danger, yeah.
I think
yeah.
that was my name. So I put it out on social media to have people.
You put yourself out there?
I always do. You know I do. And I had asked people to send me in their CB handle names. And I actually got, for us, a pretty solid response.
Okay.
I got a few. So we're going to go through them, and we're going to kind of pick them apart a little bit here. So Jay McNelly, who you know, correct?
Yes.
His CB handle name is Jazzbone Musket.
Yeah, that's great.
Which I think is amazing. I don't know what a jazzbone is.
I can think of some things.
But
I think it's like a trombone.
But just a jazzbone.
A jazzbone.
So that was a fun one. My friend Ben from post-college years, his CB handle name is the Burly Rambler, which I love.
I'm the Burly Rambler.
I told him that he was always going to be my Burly Rambler, and he said, minus the Burly. I said, no, you're all Burl.
All Burl.
You're all Burl.
Burly Rambler, this is Grandfather Knuckles. Come back.
Burly Rambler? Burly Rambler here.
I got you, good buddy. That's not how Ben sounds, I imagine.
Richard. I knew he was going to jump in on this one. Redline Coyote.
Damn.
Which actually, of all the names, he's the only one that I think hits and feels exact. Like, that just feels like a true
Redline
CB handle name.
You Redline Coyote. You
Danger Dog the... Coyote, come in. This is Redline Coyote. I love it. It just sounds so good.
Danger Dog Coyote and Redline Coyote.
Yeah. That's, I think, that the Adventures of Danger Dog and Redline.
Oh, my God. The Coyote Brothers.
Yes.
Unmercilessly chased by Grandfather Knuckles.
You damn kids, I got to come back here.
Yep.
Grandfather Knuckles.
They call me Moose.
So this next one I wrote down, and I'm pretty sure it's incorrect. It's from Tyler.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So I'm going to read the next one, and I'm going to go back and look because I'm pretty sure I wrote it down incorrectly. So my friend Mark, who I've most recently met from church, he was asking about our show. He commented on it. His name is Magnum Coyote.
Dean, what is this? All the people that
Because their last names all start with a C.
The Coyote Brothers. God.
So we are the Coyote Brothers, me, Richard, and Mark. We got Magnum, Redline, and Danger Dog.
Man, Magnum, Redline, and Danger Dog.
And I am currently trying to look for the CB. Okay, here it is. So, nope, I was wrong. So Tyler is actually another coyote.
Yeah.
So it's Trouble Coyote.
Trouble Coyote.
That was not as good. I don't like
trouble,
that one.
Oh, he is trouble, though.
So we got a lot of coyotes in the house. Apparently, we have a lot of people with C names.
Uh-huh.
So I appreciate that about everybody.
And you got this. You got Knuckles right here.
And you got Grandfather. Actually, it was Godfather Knuckles.
It was Godfather Knuckles, but I think Grandfather
Knuckles. But you really wanted to be Grandfather Knuckles.
But so. If it was Godfather Knuckles, he would be like, you know, he could be the one hiring the Coyote Brothers.
That's a true.
I'm Godfather Knuckles.
Did I just say that's a true?
You're a friggin' idiot.
That's a true, Greg.
You speaking of speaking like that.
What? You speak well. Good. Go ahead.
I watched Cloud Atlas again.
Oh, I hate that movie. It's the only movie. I can't remember the last time I've ever shut a movie off. I got less than an hour in.
You did the true?
And I was done.
I actually really liked
it. Wait, did you say... No, you said Cloud Atlas, right?
Yeah,
Cloud Atlas. In my head, I heard Coyote Ugly. Because of the coyotes.
Are you all the bartenders at Coyote Ugly? Are you?
I
like,
am every single one of them, and I dance so freely, Gregory. You know I do.
Nope. I'm Knuckles.
So those are our CB handle names. Keep them coming out, guys. If you really want to throw them in at any point, we're happy to get them from you. I also put up a Twitter poll.
Are you in your polls, man?
So the who's more likely question. Who's more likely to urinate in public, and who's more likely to laugh out loud watching Apocalypse Now, which was our first four-way poll.
Oh, God, what happened here?
So you and I both said that Michael is the more likely to urinate in public. Mm-hmm. Actually, you said Michael and Kit. Because Kit likes to drip condensation out of his tailpipe.
That's right.
So we talk about that being pee.
He has leakage problems.
Listeners, obviously, they went with Michael. 80% of our listeners said Michael is the more likely to urinate in public, and 20% said Kit.
Okay.
And then the next one, who is more likely to laugh out loud watching Apocalypse Now? Mm-hmm. We said Michael, Devin, Kit, or Bonnie. You and I both agreed on Bonnie only because of my explanation of how all four of them, and I'm going to try to recreate it now, having not listened to last week's episode. I said, nope, I can't remember it.
You said something along the lines of Bonnie would be laughing out of happiness and kind of surprise that
yes.
she was invited out
yes.
to hang out with Michael and Devin at the movies.
Absolutely. I think Devin would be so stoic about it because these are his favorite movies. Like, this is what he watches on a good weekend. He'd be so stoic about it that he would just be completely wrapped in whatever he was watching.
I could also... Okay, go ahead.
And I did mention that Devin's favorite war movie would be The Bridge on the River Kwai.
Yes, you did say that.
I said Kit. I don't know. What did I say about Kit? Do you remember what I said about Kit?
I don't.
I don't remember. And I don't remember what I said about Michael either.
Mm.
So we both said Bonnie.
Mm-hmm.
Listeners, no one voted for Kit.
Aw.
40% for Bonnie. 40% for Devin, and 20% for Michael. Richard commented and said Devin just because he's a badass.
Well, see, I'm thinking about him right now, about Devin, and I almost think he would be laughing because he's like, that's not how you do that.
Okay, I thought about that too, just like
a guffaw sort of way.
I also feel like Devin was the type, so being it escaping from two German POW camps, I feel like he's the type of person that would escape, turn around, and just laugh at the prison guards.
Right.
Uncontrollably, like, I just did this twice.
You think?
Fucking kidding
he'd
me?
Like, give him the raspberry and like,
yeah, like yeah. I just fucking twice. This is the second time I've done this. Are you kidding me, guys?
Mm-hmm.
And then he would laugh and run away while tinkling,
while pissing the entire time.
There's something wrong with us, Greg.
Nah,
no,
I don't think so.
All right, well, those are our poll results, Greg. Do you want to head on over and have a good old glass of beer and listen to Richard's Corner?
Oh, sure. Do my
okay,
friend.
Guys. So Richard left this, I believe. Oh, that's right. I'm reading the Google Translate, and as from what I can understand on this, this is the message because we talked about alternative cuss words.
Yes.
And so this message is devoted completely to alternative cuss words. So we'll let Richard take over here.
Good evening, gentlemen. I've got a few curse words to add to your list from last week. First one is suffering succotash. I learned that from Sylvester the Cat from the old Looney Tunes cartoons. For example, someone could say, suffering succotash. Did they really let go of Patricia McPherson? The second one that I have is actually from the Star Wars universe. It's in the language of Hutties. The word is echuta.
What? Yes.
For example, if a stormtrooper comes up to you and says, let me see some scandocs, you could say echuta. In which case, you better just run like hell because they're going to start shooting at you. The third word that I have is from the cartoon Adventure Time, and the word is lump. For example, one might say, I lumping hate that, or okay. Lump off. All right, guys, take care.
Love it.
Have you ever seen Adventure Time?
I can't remember.
I don't know much about Adventure Time, so I've never seen the show. But I do like the idea of, like using a word like that, like lump off instead of, yeah, I like that.
Lump off.
What was the show, Firefly?
Mm-hmm.
They used to have a word instead of, they used to say Goram, yeah, instead of, like, I can't get the Goram controls to work.
Okay.
That's how they would, so I actually like using words in that context.
Oh,
as
that's
well.
Nice.
I think that's
kind of
nice.
Mixing
you don't
it
care.
Up.
Mm. You don't care at all.
Meh.
Nope, not even a little bit, Greg. Speaking of which, Gregory, do you want to talk about tonight's episode?
It's, you know, out of all the things that we could talk about, this is at the top of my list.
All right, guys, here we go. It's season 1, episode 21, Nobody Does It Better. Then who?
I don't know.
Nobody does it better than who?
It doesn't really make sense. You know, I remember pulling that out of the DVD sleeve and being like, okay, all right, I'll watch this, and putting it back after it and being like, I don't understand what that meant.
It makes very little sense,
mm-hmm,
and that's okay.
It is.
But I kept thinking about, I just was trying to put it to a song, because that's generally what I do.
As opposed to a psalm.
Nobody does it better. See, I was trying to come up with
it sounds like the beginning to some crappy TV show.
Yes.
Nobody does it better.
That should be the title.
Michael Knight, Devin, and Kit.
That should be the title of an 80s sitcom. Like, instead of, like, just the 10 of us, Nobody Does It Better.
Starring
Dick Van Patten.
Or, what's his name? Not Scott Bakula.
Scott Baio?
Scott Baio, yes.
The one from Charles and
Charles.
Yes,
that's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
Why? Why do we both think that?
I don't know.
Nobody does it better than Devin, Kit, Michael, and Bonnie. And Kit, I don't know.
I got nothing for you. I got nothing. Again, maybe we'll figure out why this was titled this, but I still don't understand quite where the title of this episode comes from.
Nobody does it better.
So I have to mention that this episode aired on April 29th, 1983, which was 6 weeks after the last episode aired.
Wow.
They went on like a weirdly long hiatus, like a 6 week hiatus at the end of the season because we have this one and then the finale next week, which aired the week after this.
Do you think Michael just took a detour and just banged a lot of people?
that explains the 6 weeks absence.
He went somewhere, I don't know, he got lost. Driving off in the desert.
Kid had to kill a lot of hobos to get where he was. He had to kill a lot of hobos to get back to this episode. So we open on Delton Micronics. And we see a man attempting to break into an office building.
Hmm.
Much like we see when, you know, I was thinking a lot of that episode of MacGyver where he broke into that office building. You know, he had the black hat over his face. He was dressed all in black completely. Mm-hmm. He breaks into the office building, and he goes to an office door, and he tries to get in. The alarm goes off. He's stopped by police, and he's brought in to see a man named Elliot Stevens.
Elliot.
Now, Elliot, he's a dink.
Yeah, pretty much.
I pretty much called what was about to happen from, the first 30 seconds of the episode. The cops leave the intruder, shut the door. The man pulls off the hat, and it's none other than Michael Knight.
Yeah, because he's wearing, like, a balaclava, you know, like
yeah.
The
did
face.
You say a baklava?
Baklava.
Is that what it was?
You know, face underwear.
Yeah. Face underwear.
What else is that?
I don't know. I didn't know. Is that really what it's called, a baklava?
Baklava, you know, like, just with your mouth. It's a gimp mask, only it's made out of cotton or something.
Oh, no. There's only one gimp mask.
All right, it's true.
And we know who that belongs to. So, here's the deal. So it turns out that Michael was actually hired by Delton Micronics to attempt to break in to see if he could penetrate the programming room.
Yeah.
Basically. So he says to Elliot, yep, I could penetrate the security perimeter without Kit's assistance. I got in with no problem. but I could not get into the programming room, which means whoever is stealing this computer software is doing it from inside.
Or Michael didn't try hard enough.
Or he did, exactly. Because he just, like, touched the door.
Yeah, he pulled out some kind of, like, a bar scan, like a credit card swiping device. You know, when you rip off ATM machines and stuff. You know, like how you do that in everyday life?
Absolutely.
Right.
So daily activity.
That, Michael had one of these devices that set off all the alarms, and the security guard, who, again, is probably in his late 50s.
Yep.
Running. I gotcha.
Yeah.
And tried to get Michael as he climbed up out of a hole.
He didn't climb very fast either.
No. No, he didn't.
So yeah. So Michael has been hired to find out if it is possible to break in and steal it. They deduce that because of that it was not possible, somebody working for Delton Micronics is clearly in charge and is stealing this computer software. So then we cut to Bonnie inside the semi, sitting in Kit, playing Space Cadet.
I know, it's awesome.
So apparently now Kit has two screens, mm-hmm. which I've never noticed before.
Yeah, they've been on the other one.
Have they?
Yeah.
Okay, so I didn't realize that.
I thought so.
Maybe.
I'm pretty sure.
Maybe they didn't. It was the first time I'd actively noticed it because this is the first time we've ever seen Bonnie playing video games.
At least two screens since the dawn of the new producer.
Yes.
Because two screens show up in the opening. In the,
oh, okay.
In the credits.
I don't pay attention. I usually fast forward the opening credits.
Yeah, I've been doing that too.
So Bonnie, on top of playing Space Cadet, Bonnie has uploaded all of the information on Delton Micronics, including Delton's entire line of video games.
Huh.
Devin, this is the first we've heard about this, a nice little character moment for Devin. Devin hates video games.
He does.
Calls them frivolous activities and wouldn't be caught dead playing a video game under any circumstances. So Bonnie basically says, and I think at this point Kit challenges Bonnie to another round.
Yeah.
And she's like, no, I don't really want to do that. And Kit makes a comment about how it can improve accuracy. I think like it improves accuracy.
It improves like hand-eye coordination or something. He does say something legitimate that
right.
Video games are good for your brain.
Right, exactly. So that's really the only scene we get in the semi after Bonnie says, yep, everything's in there. I've got everything uploaded. That's good to go. Michael leaves. And they're going over all the suspects who could potentially have been stealing this computer programming. And they find out that of the four suspects, each of the men hold a computer science degree. Two of them are close friends of Elliot. So they kind of rule them out immediately. They're not the type that are going to betray Elliot. The other two show no criminal behavior, but one of the suspects has two addresses. A man by the name of Julian Groves.
Julian Groves.
Greg, who's Julian portrayed by?
Julian Groves.
Do you even remember?
Wally Cleaver.
One Mr. Tony Dow. Which I was just like, I saw him come out of the apartment building in the next scene, and I'm like, hey, it's Wally.
I know, right? It was like, oh, that is Wally.
Good old Wally. And so the next scene we see, we cut to a woman who's, quote unquote, she's photographing roller skaters, but what she's really doing is she's photographing Julian coming out of his apartment.
Yeah.
She's using these roller skaters as like a guise to shoot pictures of Julian coming out of his apartment. Once Julian leaves, she goes into his apartment and immediately taps the phone. And my note here is, do you remember how much work MacGyver put in to tap that phone line in the motel?
Oh, yeah, I know.
And she just, like, unscrews it and then drops the thing in, and she's done.
Well, we're talking about the old, like, handsets from, you know, the dial, the rotary phones.
Yeah, and I just thought
really easy to take apart.
I just thought it was so funny how much work and effort MacGyver put into, like, go through the wall of the opposite room to into the other guy's
room
to tap the phone wire.
Yeah, I remember that.
I remember that vividly. I'm like, so this lady just like, yep, just drop that right in there and screws it back.
Gee, Wally. As soon as he came on, all I could think of, because about the last time that I, you know of any film that he was in was Kentucky Fried Movie. We almost said it.
Kentucky Fried Movie.
There we go.
Okay,
yeah.
Go ahead.
And he was playing himself as Wally Cleaver.
Yeah.
And
it was the courtroom scene, right?
It was the courtroom scene.
That's my favorite scene.
Gee, Wally. Yeah. Right. Yeah, I don't remember.
That would have been the same year.
Yeah.
Because this was 83 and Kentucky Fried Movie came out the same year.
Yeah.
So okay. So that makes complete
sense.
That's
why he looked very similar.
Yeah. He's like the 5 o'clock shadow, like really kind of frumpy and like just
completely
really browbeaten. It worked well for the character because you get the sense that Julian is a very stressed person.
Yes.
Everything creates a level of stress that is not needed.
So his tracksuit is basically just saturated with sweat.
Yeah. He's just a sweaty, curly gross middle-aged man.
Wally.
So Michael is this? Yeah. So Michael pulls into the Hillsdale Tennis Club, which was what the second address was.
God, a tennis club.
The tennis club.
You.
It's, you know, it's what you would expect because, you know, you go in and you order a beer and that's what you get.
Well, instead he didn't get a beer. He got fresh squeezed orange juice.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Remember?
That's
because there's a big pitcher of orange juice on the bar top, and Michael's like just trying to get information, talks to the bartender. Hey, is this fresh? Squeeze it fresh every day myself. Awesome.
What do you squeeze it with? Oh, my ass cheeks.
Yeah.
it's nope, not going there. Not going there. So he sees Julian and Julian is training on the tennis courts with a woman named Connie. Connie leads a bit of a double life.
Oh, Connie.
We have a conversation here with Julian and Connie where Julian tells Connie, I want out. I want to be done with this. And Connie's like, well, it's not really that easy because remember, you're an industrial spy. If you back out, I'm going to bring all that information to the cops.
Oh, I thought he wanted out of the tennis lessons.
Oh, no, he was
kidding.
I was like, really?
Connie, I can't do this anymore.
I can't play tennis. Connie, it gives me the farts.
You know, it's funny. It's funny you say that. It's funny you say that because you signed a contract.
Yeah.
For 24 tennis lessons. We're only at 9.
But
buddy.
I don't want to do that anymore. Shh. Connie! Shh. Where's my brother?
10 lessons. 10 lessons more.
Craig.
What?
You're funny.
That leaves 19, so my math was wrong.
Wait, did you say 10 and that leaves 19?
Shh, that's 29. Shh, 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 shh.
Okay, we're gonna leave it at that. So Connie tells Julian, okay, yeah, you could. That's fine if you want to bail. That's cool. But I'll just go ahead and tell the cops that you're an industrial spy, and this whole thing will end. Oh, really?
Yeah, fuck you.
I don't want to do that. Fuck you. And he shoots her.
He smashes her so hard with a tennis racket, he actually dices her.
Reminds me of the scene from Billy Madison where the guy throws the stapler at his... he throws the stapler at Joyce and puts her in a coma. Joyce?
That's not funny.
Sorry. Anyway, all Connie wants is
another baby.
All Connie wants is another baby, Greg. I just want another baby.
All Connie wants is another baby.
Because no one does it better than Wally Cleaver. Is that going to be the running gag for the series?
God almighty. Nobody does it better than Wally Cleaver and...
Connie. So, for real though, all Connie wants is for Julian to bring her the last program that he promised her.
Okay.
Julian's like, okay, but I'm pretty sure someone's following me taking pictures. And Connie's like, oh, don't worry about that. As we literally cut to a woman sitting across from him at the bar, mm-hmm. just like snapping photos.
Which is the same woman that was outside of his house.
Yeah.
Like blatantly taking photos.
I just thought that was that.
Of
made
these
me...
random roller skaters. Yeah.
Yeah. That made me laugh so hard in the scene where Connie and Julian are having lunch. And he's like, I'm really paranoid someone's taking pictures of me. And Connie's like, oh, I wouldn't worry about that. As we literally pan over to a woman sitting 5 feet from them.
I know. And the dumb thing is, so like if Connie is like is into buying, you know, industrial secrets and all that sort of stuff, you think she would take that more seriously.
Right.
You think you have someone following you? Okay. Get rid of them. Or
yeah.
Connie.
I wouldn't worry about it, Julian. Who's that woman taking pictures of me right there? It's fine.
She's taking pictures of the fresh squeezed orange juice.
It's fine. She's taking pictures of Armand, the bartender.
Yeah, with his ass cheeks. Now, do you think if you were to squeeze oranges with your ass cheeks, you'd have to cut the orange up first?
You'd have to strain the dingleberries out.
Oh, God almighty. Or would... No. Okay. Would you do it slice by slice? Because it might fit in there like a nice wedge.
Yes.
Or would you do like the whole half of an orange?
You'd have to do it slice by slice, but then you'd run the risk of actually sucking it up into your butthole.
I don't know about you. That does... I don't know how to...
Citrus in the butthole? I don't feel like that... That doesn't seem like it's going to work very well. It's going to burn.
Nobody does it better
than squeezing fresh oranges with your butthole.
Flavors of Armand.
We got to talk about Armand in a few minutes when we get there.
Flavors of Armand.
So Michael sees the woman taking photos, and he goes over and confronts her at the same time that Julian has now just noticed that a woman's taking pictures of her, and he runs. And he's like, I'm sorry, I gotta go.
I gotta go. I left the chicken in the blender.
So Michael follows him, and then the woman follows Michael. And so Michael realizes that the woman is following him, leads her to like a cul-de-sac, and corners her so that he can get out and question her. Now, the woman actually does a really smart thing. Mm-hmm. Michael gets her out I don't know how the cops became involved.
Because they were driving at breakneck speeds through a residential neighborhood.
True. Good point.
Knocking over trash cans full of freshly cut grass that get stuck in. Did you see all that
shit? I did see that. Yes, that's right.
So that's the dumbest thing. Like, Michael goes off to follow Wally.
Yep.
And then this woman taking photos goes off to chase Michael. Kit notices that they're being followed, and he tries to. He's like, "You keep track of Cleavis, whatever Armand. No, Wally, Cleaver,
Cleavis, Armand, Wally. Done. Good. Go
Hello,
ahead.
My name is Cleavis Armand. Would you like some orange juice?
Continue.
Yes. And saying? Basically, he tells Kit to keep track of Wally or whatever. What's his name?
Julian.
Julian. To keep track of Julian, and he's like, "We have something more important. I want to know who this woman is."
Yeah.
So basically, he sets her up. Like, he starts going really fast in these neighborhoods, and he's in Kit, of course, fast car, and right. She's in some little, like, gremlin, I think.
It was a gremlin. It was. Yes. Yeah.
Redlining.
It was my mother's first car.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Was
I think that might have been the actual car that my mother first owned.
That was your mother's
was
first
a gremlin.
Car.
Yeah.
It made it to California into Knight Rider.
Yeah. That was my mother's gremlin.
Ask to see the VIN.
I feel like gremlins had a tendency to just catch fire randomly.
What was there was the Pinto that, you know, you rear-end it, they blow up.
Yes.
And then
I think the gremlins had a history of catching
shit.
On fire.
Yeah, they might have. Yeah.
They would just go ablaze.
Terrible. But yeah, so anyway, due to them chasing each other through the residential neighborhood and Michael corners her in the cul-de-sac,
yeah.
He gets out really angrily. It's like, what are you doing? You know, like as if he has any authority.
Right.
And
right.
Then she pulls a gun on him.
Yeah.
Like, okay. And he immediately disarms her.
Right.
And it's like talking to her, like taking the bullets out, puts it in his pocket, and then a cop shows up.
And she does the smart thing, plays the victim, and says, "This man's trying to hold me up, and he's got a gun." Cop finds the gun and says, "Oh, yeah, you're under arrest."
Yeah.
Arrests Michael, impounds Kit.
Yep, again.
We get a great line after Michael gets bailed out where Michael goes, "I don't like jails." And Kit says, "I don't like police impounds." And he makes a mention of it, too, I think, in the season finale.
He might.
He makes a mention of how much he hates the impound. So Kit is we're gonna see that a lot, I think. So Kit runs the woman's license plate after he's bailed out. It is registered under a woman named Flannery Rowe. Flannery Rowe.
Flannery Rowe.
Yep, that's her name. So Michael heads over there, and we realize that Flannery Rowe is a private investigator.
Ugh.
Flannery Rowe?
Flannery Rowe was like the dirty part of the docks. Like,
seriously?
I'm going down to Flannery Rowe.
I mean, that's almost as bad as Liberty Cox. Flannery Rowe.
Liberty Cox, Flannery Rowe, Cleavis Armand.
Cleavis Armand. So Michael goes in, of course, as Michael does. He breaks and enters.
Mm-mm.
No, it was already broken into.
The door's open.
The door is open and he goes in and it's been ransacked.
Right.
Flannery shows up while Michael's just like snooping around.
No, after Michael's there snooping around, and then Cleavis Armand, the bartender, is there.
Oh, that's right. He pistol whips him.
Pistol whips him.
Yeah, that's
he
right.
Pistol whips
him with an orange juice gun.
Piss on him. Pistol whips him. Knocks him out. And so then that's where Flannery shows up, and Michael's like waking up. Or no, he like hides behind the door because he hears her coming.
And she opens the door and smacks him in the face with it.
Right. So the dumb thing is, like, Michael, okay, you go to this woman's house. She's a private investigator. You go through her office. You see everything's been torn apart.
Right.
I would leave. Just like, hey, this woman just got me arrested.
Right.
I would leave and get more information about her.
No. He continues to pursue her.
So the one thing that really gets me about this relationship is that she's a private investigator, presumably licensed.
Yeah.
Michael is just a dude. That's it.
Yeah.
Just a dude.
That's all he is. Absolutely.
Ugh.
So once he regains consciousness and then Flannery finds him in there, she blames Michael for trashing the office.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like, no, this definitely wasn't me. Like, somebody was here, knocked me out,
mm-hmm.
and, like, here we are.
Okay,
you
prove
know?
It.
Right.
Prove it, Michael.
Right.
You tell me that you didn't trash this office.
And Michael's like, you're in way over your head, and you need to be careful about all this, blah, 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 blah.
What a threat.
Right.
I mean, that's not the kind of thing that a friend says.
No.
And he's like, you're in way over your head, and this could get really dangerous, so you better back off.
Right. I was like, he gets really aggressive with her.
Like, do you think that if you're a private investigator and some, like, you know, like dude shows up and you think he ransacked your office and then tells you to back off, you're
right.
going to do that?
Right. It doesn't make any sense.
I don't know.
He was super aggressive with her. So he leaves and he tells Kit that he needs to get some info on Connie.
Mm-hmm.
And so Kit's running that. We get a scene as Michael leaves. Flannery gets on the phone and calls a woman who we find out is Julian's wife, Mrs.
Uh-huh.
Groves. She tells Mrs. Groves, tonight's the night. I'm going to catch this. This is going to be the clincher. They have an appointment. They're going to meet Julian and Connie. They're getting together at Julian's apartment.
Mm-hmm.
So Julian has an apartment.
Yeah, right.
And his wife is... That's weird.
Well, I mean...
They're not divorced, are they?
No.
No.
Wait, or separated, maybe.
Maybe they're separated. I didn't catch that. I just thought it was weird that they're like, yeah, they're going to meet at Julian's apartment.
Uh-huh.
It's like, oh.
Yeah, maybe they're separated. Let's assume that.
So the story goes that Connie was a gifted athlete. She was also one of the top models in New York. She was involved with some of the wealthiest men on the East Coast. And aside from being a tennis trainer, she's had some bit parts and, you know, some pretty good movies.
Mm-hmm.
Michael thinks that Connie is using Julian for some reason or another, and he tells Kit, it's more than a hunch and less than a certainty. So it's somewhere in between there.
That's,
you know,
super vague.
Such
buddy.
A Michael response, though.
More than a hunch, but less than a certainty.
Yeah, it's just, it could be. I mean, I'm probably wrong, but, you know, I don't know.
I'm probably most likely not wrong, maybe.
Right. It's like a 50-40% chance that I'm not wrong.
What about that other 10%?
Like another 30% that I might be partially incorrect.
So 120%?
Yeah, that's about right. I mean, it's less than a hunch, but it's more than a certainty that I'm right and that Kit, you're going to be the one to arrest Connie.
What? Kit doesn't have hands.
That's how convoluted this got.
Yes.
So Michael arrives back at Delton Micronics. Apparently, there's a big party going on there for all the secretaries.
I know, right? Late at night. Was this around? No.
It was at night.
Wasn't this Christmas time?
Was it Christmas? No. I mean, unless,
sure?
unless they're taking it by air date, which would have been April 83. So it wouldn't be Christmas. It was just I think it was like the party and all the secretaries were there. And Julian is there and he's panicking because he's like, well, I don't want to leave with the program because what if someone catches me? And Connie's like, just walk out like you know what you're doing.
Right.
Nothing's going to happen. And that's what he does. He just like takes his briefcase and walks out
but
and no one questions
Michael's
him.
Michael's out there waiting in the dark.
And he tells Kit, all right, Kit, you ready for this?
Yeah.
Kit x-rays the briefcase while it's moving.
I know.
And we find out that there's paperwork in that briefcase that will more than likely connect Julian to Connie.
Okay.
All right. So they lock in on his location and they basically... They lowjack him, and they follow him to wherever he's going, and they track him back
I think
there's to
his OnStar
home.
Him.
Do they have OnStar in 83?
No.
Oh, okay. Do they have lowjack in 83?
I don't know.
Okay. They did something.
They probably had something. They
did something there.
Yeah.
So they track him back to his home.
Mm-hmm.
Julian goes into the house. Flannery is following them. She goes in to snap some photos, and when she goes into the apartment, she finds Connie dead.
Dead.
In the bed. With her head.
Dead.
And Michael arrives just in time to hold her.
I know, right? Like, oh,
he says,
because after they had this whole discussion at the tennis club, Michael, I'm perfectly safe. I'm all this stuff. He doesn't even know who he is, but, you know, I'm perfectly fine. This isn't dangerous. I'm strong. I can do all this. And it's just like, come on. Why do they have to write her to be so naive?
Right. And that, because then he immediately runs in because the script told him to.
Right.
And he just
and holds her.
Yeah. It's great. So then we cut.
But wouldn't it be funny if he holds her, like, his back's to the body so she has to see it?
He puts his arms around the back of her.
Yeah.
And he holds her. So his chest is on her back, but she's still staring at the body.
He's like, oh.
It's okay. It's okay. It's okay.
Just
so is it the same night that we see them having coffee where he's trying to talk Flannery through the murder, like, just through witnessing her first murder?
No, oh, it's the same night, but it's after they went to the police and everything.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so they did whatever their statements were, and he drove her to coffee or whatever that is, and I think he had beer And she was just sitting there
drinking orange juice.
Right.
Ass juice.
Ass for orange ass juice.
So I love this part because Michael basically says, you know, Flannery, I don't know if you're cut out for the private investigator business.
I know.
I just don't think this is the job for you. I think you're way off base here. And she's like, oh, I thought that Julian was cheating on his wife. And Michael's like, I'm pretty sure you suck at this job because that's not why Julian was seeing Connie.
Right. he calls her out on this stuff, but also like he doesn't know anything about her.
Yeah.
Anything.
Right.
She might not have been looking for anything else. Like, oh, he's acting really suspicious with another woman.
Yeah.
Okay.
But she just calls her out. He's like, yeah, you're a shitty PI.
Yeah, you're not good at this.
Yeah, I think you should just close your business down and be a photographer. Go photograph roller skaters.
Pretty much. Go photograph Armand in his orange juice.
Right. This is a series of shots. This one's called ass juice. This one's called orange ass. This is called ass orange. Anyway, Michael calls Devin and says, listen, Julian didn't kill Connie. It clearly wasn't her. And Devin's like, well, the police think otherwise because he's the only suspect at this point. So okay.
Shitty police.
Right. They're terrible police. If this is the only, they're not like, well, we're just going to, you know, innocent until proven guilty. Like, we're going to go ahead and follow up with this. They're like, nope, he's the only suspect. That's it. He's under arrest. Oh, okay. Sure.
That sounds great.
So the next morning at morning meeting at the foundation, Elliot's at the morning meeting. And he's like, hey, here's the deal. The source code for my latest game was stolen. And Michael's like, okay, I need to find out who's buying these codes as well as selling those secrets.
But like Elliot stormed in.
Yeah.
He's like, hey, someone stole some stuff from me. You're not doing your job. Bye. And that was pretty much the scene.
Yeah, it was.
Okay.
So back at the tennis club, Michael and Armand are Armand Cleven. What did you call him?
Clevis.
Clevis Armand. Basically gets like wicked defensive on Michael. Because Michael starts talking about how Connie loves living in the fast lane. This was the way her life was going. She was really doing this. And Armand's like, hey, what do you do? And then do they get into a scuffle? Because Michael confronts, do they get into a fight at this point? Or is it a little bit later?
I don't know. I think he just storms out.
Oh, maybe he does. Oh, no. Because then he confronts Flannery, who's just shockingly is also at the tennis club again.
Surprise, surprise.
Surprisingly. And Flannery's like, you know, I still think that Julian's having an affair. And he may have murdered Connie because of it. And Michael's like, ah!
He's like, he just wants to punch her in the face.
He's like, what? No! Michael's like, once again, he's like, he tries to tell her, stay out of this.
But the thing is, they're also trying to, Michael's trying to be, like, I guess, sleuthy. He's not being good at it. But he grabs Flannery by the arm and drags her outside.
Right.
And, like, has this whole conversation.
And then he ends it saying, fine, have it your way. Do whatever you want. That's fine. And then
Michael
has a hissy fit and storms
off. Get out of my way.
Yeah.
Stay out of my way.
So Michael takes it into his own hands and goes to visit Julian's wife.
Oh, I thought you were going to say he was going to squeeze the orange juice.
I wished he had.
I'm going to take it into my own hands and squeeze this orange juice.
Apparently, Mrs. Groves hasn't seen her husband in weeks. What?
Oh.
She says, she's like, I don't actually know where he went, but I know that he didn't kill Connie. It's just not in his nature to do that.
Oh, okay. How well do you know?
That's what they said about Ted Bundy, too.
Right. But Michael's like, I believe you. He didn't kill her. And he wasn't sleeping with her either.
And I love that. I was like, oh, so you, okay. Where's the proof, Mike?
Yeah, Michael doesn't know that either. But like, he's like, look, I think your husband is stealing, electronic
programming.
Secrets,
yeah.
Programming secrets.
Right.
She's like, oh. But she was more happy that her husband wasn't cheating on him.
Right.
Than committing industrial espionage.
Basically, yeah. And she was like, and I think Connie was the one who was taking the programming off his hands. I don't think the murder and Julian's theft of the programming are related.
I just also, you know, I'm thinking of Connie. It's unfortunate that she died. She died for a reason.
Yes.
But doesn't this gentleman make, I don't know, video game programming?
Yeah, he makes video games. That's what Delton Micronics, like, that sounds like what their specialty is like top-of-the-line video games.
So Connie died for video games.
She died for video game source code.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, unless I'm wrong, but I don't think I think that's what I got.
I'm going to say that I think that the source code was actually the beginnings of The Matrix.
Okay.
And you know, a gateway into
16
Skynet.
Years prior to The Matrix? Yeah, that sounds about right.
And it's the beginning of The Matrix.
Okay.
So that source code was used to create The Matrix.
Okay, I'm there for it 100%.
I have to make the source code more important than it is.
No, I absolutely. So Mrs. Groves tells Michael that Julian had started acting very strange. She's like, he's not really a man for sports, so I thought it was really weird that he all of a sudden decided he wanted to take up tennis. And then he's fishing all of a sudden, which he never really liked. And he kept mentioning that he was going fishing on at a place called Shaker Lake. And Michael's like, we got to go there. That's where it is.
I got to go to Shaker Lake. There's a cabin up there. Let's go.
And Michael's like, well, the fishing trips were clearly a cover.
Well, he asked her, who told him to go on these? Who was he going with? Who said he should do it?
Right.
His boss did.
Oh.
And who was his boss?
Elliot Stevens.
So now we're led to believe that Elliot Stevens is somehow part of this job to steal this computer programming. The owner of Delton Micronics is somehow involved in the theft of all of this source code. So he finds out where Julian's fishing trips are, and he figures that Shaker Lake was a place that Julian may have stashed the payoff money.
Sure. Oh, and it's within 2 hour driving time of wherever Michael is right now.
Of course it is. Absolutely. Oh, you know what I forgot to do? I was watching the DVDs the other day, and I found a bonus feature that actually talked about Kit's speed. And it's talked about how Kit could go from 0 to 1/4 mile in like 4.2 seconds.
That's insane.
Yeah. I think it's like max of like 300 miles per hour, but he could go like 1/4 mile in 4 seconds.
You see him driving recklessly fast a lot.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I don't think we've ever seen him cap 300, though. He's gotten up over 2.
Yeah? Okay.
Yeah, I've definitely seen the speedometer go over 200 miles, but I don't think we've ever seen him cap 300.
I don't know, man.
It'd be really interesting. So we get to the cabin on the lake. Kit picks up 2 voices coming from inside. It's Julian Groves and Armand Clevis.
Yeah, sure.
It's Armand from the bar.
Yeah, squeezing oranges.
Julian's in the cabin with Armand. Michael breaks in. He and Armand get into fisticuffs for a few minutes. Armand actually ends up getting the upper hand, and he runs. Michael goes after him, and somehow Michael goes out of the cabin, comes back into the cabin, and Armand is there holding Flannery hostage.
Yeah.
I don't know how
Flannery's outside. Michael chases Armand outside just to find that he's holding Flannery because she was outside, I think, looking in.
Oh, was that what it was?
I don't know.
I don't remember. Anyway.
She appeared. I
point
don't know.
Yeah, the point is that Flannery has now been taken hostage. Shockingly. So Armand takes Flannery and leaves. Michael and Julian leave, following Armand and Flannery. Kit is following them with no one else in the car. So basically, they kind of hatch this plan. Kit pulls up beside Armand with no one in the car, and Armand starts, like, flipping out.
Yep.
Oh my God, there's nobody driving that car!
I know, and then Flannery's in there. He's like, what, you gotta be careful, man. You just gotta chill out, just relax.
Right.
Because he was gonna kill her, but
yeah.
She's pretty relaxed about it.
She's totally, totally relaxing. Now, right before this moment when Kit jumps over the creek to catch up to Armand, did you notice the shot of Kit jumping the creek and how much shit was just like hanging off Kit?
Right, it was just like one of the shell cars that they used.
It was so blatantly obvious that was just like a shitbox version of Kit, because even when it hit the ground, you see the entire thing just like crumple for a split second before it takes off.
It's just like a frame, wheels, and like that's it, like the body panels.
It was. I thought it was really funny. So we're back in Julian's car as Michael and Julian. No, it's not Julian's car. It's Flannery's car, I think.
It's a Bronco.
It's Julian's. Julian's like, here. He kind of tells Michael how everything happened. He's like, you know, it all started at the tennis club. Connie wanted me to show her one of our programs. Mm-hmm. That's really all she wanted. And he's like, and that's the only way he would say that he was involved. That Connie wanted to see one of Delton Micronics programs. Julian says, I didn't kill her. And Michael's like, okay, well, that's going to be up to the police from now on. Like, you're going to have to prove that to the police. I'm like, well, they already think you kill him. So I don't know if that's going to make much of a difference. So this is what I love. So Kit drives past Armand in the opposite direction, turns around and catches up and gets over the PA and tells Armand to pull over. And Armand's flipping out.
Yeah.
Because there's nobody driving and there's a voice coming out of this PA system in a car. Kit drives Armand off the road.
Yes.
Armand gets out, and he kind of goes to look inside Kit's window to see if anyone's in there, and Kit does the tint.
Yeah.
He tints his windows. Michael catches up at this point, confronts Armand, kind of knocks him around, trying to get some information about the contact, like who does number two work for type of a scenario.
Who squeezes orange juice?
Who squeezes the ass juice? And Armand's like, I swear to God, I don't know who's running the show. And Michael basically, because the cops, I think, are right there.
Yeah, the cops show up now.
Right.
And Michael's like, fine. And then, like, lets them go. Like, yeah. Gives Armand to the cops and gives...
Basically, he makes Julian turn himself in and says, listen, I'm going to do everything I can to help you, but you got to turn yourself in now.
But the cops don't do anything? How do they know? Like, did Kit call them? Did Devin call them? Because Michael's in the hot seat because he was arrested earlier for pulling a gun on Flannery.
Right.
Right? In the same town, I guess.
Exactly.
I don't know.
It was very, very strange.
And the cops are like, yeah, sure. Michael's nothing. He's just a Michael.
Right.
He just works for the foundation.
But we don't know that. Like, they don't know that. This goes back to how many times have we said this. Michael is literally a nobody.
I know.
He is literally a nobody. He's been a nobody for like close to a year at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. So they go back to Mrs. Groves' house, and Mrs. Groves says that a man at work talked Julian into doing this. And it's revealed right at that moment, which we kind of called a while ago, that man was Elliot Stevens.
What a dick.
So Bonnie calls Elliot, pretending to be an old friend of Connie's.
Yeah.
Basically kind of like playing up this whole story. And she tells Elliot, you know, hey, if Connie said if anything happened to her, that I should get in touch with you about this briefcase.
But so an old friend of Connie's that left the briefcase at her house and told her that if anything happened to call you. So Connie's dead, presumably my friend. I'm like, okay.
Right.
I'm supposed to give this briefcase back to you in exchange for blah, blah, blah.
Right. So he kind of plays dumb until Bonnie says that she's going to turn the briefcase into the cops. He's like, oh, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know who this is. I don't know what it is. And she goes, okay, well, I guess this briefcase is just going to have to go to the cops because I don't know what's in it. And he goes, oh, hold on. Hold on. Where do you want to meet? And she's like, let's meet at the tennis club.
I want to meet at Armand's place.
I want to meet at Armand's ass place.
His juice bar.
The ass juice bar? You
yes.
go there too?
I do go to
this
the ass
great.
Juice bar. Yeah.
What's your favorite kind? Dingleberry stew or the
thigh squeezins?
Thigh squeezins. Oh, Greg, that's a good one.
You like it?
So they get to the club, and Bonnie is there as her alter ego. She's surprisingly cool.
What's her alter ego?
Patricia McPherson.
Okay.
She just goes by her real name. I don't know. So she asks Elliot, okay, here's the briefcase. You gotta make with the money first. Give me the money first. He gives her the money. She hands over the briefcase. He leaves, and as he's walking out, he sees Michael.
Yeah.
Elliot gets in the car and tries to drive away. And obviously we know how this is going to happen. Michael and Kit chase after him. But Elliot, it's this point. So they stop. Elliot gets stopped short because there's a tow truck blocking the path from him going any further. So he just steals the tow truck.
I know, right? That's the smart. I would have backed up or just gone around the tow truck.
Yeah, no.
He had space.
And the tow truck had a car on the back
right,
of it.
The guy just finished hooking up the car. So have you ever seen original Gone in 60 Seconds?
Oh, yes.
There's a whole like 10-minute chase scene where he's... there's a chase scene with a tow truck. It almost looks like the same tow truck, towing
right.
a car. It's awesome. One of the best chase scenes ever.
Oh, absolutely.
It's the same sort of thing, except that Elliot can't drive a tow truck.
No.
And Michael chases him, and basically the chase ends because Elliot hits a big pile of dirt.
Yeah.
And that's it.
And that's it. I love it. And he gets out, and we've seen this 1,000 times. Car hits the pile of dirt. Michael goes over, takes him out, and throws him up on the side of the car and kind of roughs him up for a few minutes before the cops show up and take Elliot into custody.
Uh-huh.
That's
it. There you go.
Sort of how that ends. And he's like, but this time Michael's like, listen, you and I have a lot to talk about. And then it fades to black.
What do you have to talk about
that Elliot was behind it? Like, what is a lot to talk about?
Elliot's behind everything. There's nothing to talk about.
So apparently...
You have a lot to talk about because Bonnie installed your fucking game on Kit and now he won't stop playing it.
That Space Cadet, though, looked pretty good. I want to play that.
You want a piece of that? You were going to say that.
So the story goes, Greg, is that apparently Elliot was due to be removed as president of the company, and Elliot got wind of it and tried to trade Delton's experimental programs to another company in exchange for a future job.
Okay.
Didn't work out so well. Elliot thought that involving the foundation would take the focus off of him selling the trade secrets. Which, again, not a bad plan,
yeah.
Just really poorly executed. And Julian, as a token of appreciation for basically we assume we don't actually hear it or see it. We assume that Julian has been let off the hook. He's been freed. He gives Devin a mini Pac-Man arcade machine to enjoy that doesn't actually play the real noises of Pac-Man. First thing I notice when he turns it on, because Devin gets like really into it.
Yeah.
You know? Uh-oh. But I'm like, that's not fucking Pac-Man. I mean, they probably couldn't get the rights to the music for Pac-Man, but like, that's not Pac-Man. Make it a mini space cadet. Like, that's all you had to do.
It's our Mon's squeeze juice party. It's a little orange that goes around trying to get away from flapping butt cheeks. Chasing them all over the screen. Orange like, mop, 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 and the butt cheeks like, you know?
Instead of Pac-Man, it's just a giant ass.
Yeah. And a little, you have to outrun the ass.
Greg, what'd you think of this episode?
It was weird, man.
I gotta tell you, they took a little bit of a nosedive
like,
in the latter half of the season.
I didn't really like Flannery. I didn't understand her character, like the point. Julian.
Orange Julius. I was like, oh, please go there.
So Orange Julian.
Yeah.
I mean, okay. He was just a little, I don't, none of these characters were great. And then poor Connie, she's in it just to die.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And Michael, like, just, I don't get it.
It was just like, they're kind of losing their focus a little bit.
Yeah.
Which doesn't give me a lot of hope for the second season.
Not at
because
all.
I don't know how far off the rails they're going to go.
But I kind of hope they go really far off the whales. Whales?
Yes.
Whales tails?
Yes.
Like, I hope that it gets like MacGyver going to Camelot weird.
I really do too. I kind of do too, because if they make that commitment before they even get into the bulk of the series, then we know that we're going to be in for something really, really special.
Man, I don't know. So I did not dislike this one. I kind of had fun with it because
okay.
I thought it was so stupid. But I'm going to give it a 3. What is that?
I actually ended up at the same rating, was a 3. I think that puts us at the red leather jacket.
Leather jacket, right.
So I got to give it a 3. It wasn't terrible, but it was nothing earth-shattering like some
right.
of the stuff we've seen. Going back a week that I talked about giving my final rating on Night Moves because I didn't know what to do, I'm going to give it as average as I can. I give it a 2.5.
Oh, right. Yeah, you didn't really talk about it.
I couldn't review it because I didn't know where it stood, and I did rewatch it.
Okay. Oh, yeah?
2.5.
So since we've talked about this, what the hell is the name of the episode mean?
Night Moves?
No, this one.
Oh, Nobody Does It Better?
Then what?
Michael? Julian?
I don't know.
Ass cleft? I don't know. I don't know.
Nobody does it better than
nobody does it better than
Armand.
Armand's sweaty butt cheeks.
I hope that he filters it through cheesecloth.
I honestly don't know.
I don't. Who does it? Nobody does it better.
Nobody does it better.
So maybe the comparison is Michael to Flannery.
Maybe it's nobody does it better than Bonnie playing video games?
Nobody does it better than Connie dying on a bed in some weird guy's house?
Let us know, guys. Let us know who nobody does it better than.
Maybe that's our question this week. Who does it
yes.
better?
So here's the deal, guys. So this week's kind of truncated for Greg and I, so we're actually going to have to bank the season finale earlier in the week than normal Wednesday. So if you guys send us anything after this episode, we will read all of your comments in the season one recap, mm-hmm. okay? Because I don't think we're going to have enough time to get into the season finale, or I don't think we're going to have enough time to kind of talk about and read all of your comments. Still send them in. I really want to know if you guys have thoughts as to who nobody does it better than. Please. Greg.
David.
Do you want to know what's coming up in the season finale?
Please.
We're here, by the way.
How did that happen?
We're at the season one finale of Knigget Rider.
You silly French Knigets.
Here we go. Next episode will be the season one finale, episode 22, Short Notice. Charged with second-degree murder and unable to clear his name, Michael pursues the only witness, a young woman on the run from her ex-husband.
Okay.
Okay. Sounds like it's going to be a clunker.
Sounds. I'm
not looking forward to that one.
I hope it's better than this week.
I don't know, man. Hopefully it will be. We'll have our fingers crossed. Greg.
Yep.
since we're not going to do a Who's More Likely this week because we won't have time since we're kind of recording the finale so quickly,
mm-hmm.
do you have anything you want to say before we tell people where to find us on the internet?
I just want to know who does it better. That's about it.
That's true. It is. That's our Who's More Likely question that will be answered in about 2 weeks.
Who does it better?
So, guys, who does it better?
And I'm not saying who out of the characters. Who does it better, just in general?
Yeah.
Who does it better?
Please let us know. Leave us a voicemail. 207-835-1954. I'd like to see that get utilized more often. Please, call us. Leave us a voicemail. Leave us a Facebook message at facebook.com/champaklein. You can hit us up on Instagram at champaklein. You can hit us up on Twitter at champaklein. You can email us, letusblowyourmind@gmail.com, and you can even rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, you jerks. Just do it.
Or you can go to our website, champaklein.com, and do all of that there.
Yeah, do that. Check out the website. Greg and I put a lot of effort into that, so do it. Greg, any closing thoughts before we say goodnight? See you guys next week?
Hell, no. Let's just go.
All right, guys. So, for the Knight Rider years, I am Sweaty Armand's ass cleft.
I'm Wally Cleaver's sweaty tennis balls.
Guys, have a fantastic week, and we'll see you for the season finale.
Reason for increased volume.
There you have it, loyal listener. A fine example of what can truly be done with podcasting. Hard work, consistent output, and just the right amount of guidance from an enigmatic network overlord. Tune in again next week to see what timeless gem I dust off for your listening pleasure. Seriously. I need to get someone into this archive room and do some cleaning. It's filthy.
You've been listening to a podcast of the Podfix Network. Discover more audible gems like this at podfixnetwork.com. Make sure to catch up-to-the-minute network shenanigans by following @Podfix on Twitter, @official_Podfix on Instagram, @Podfix Network on Facebook. And make sure to subscribe to Podfix Presents wherever you choose to find podcasts. The Podfix Network, artist owned and loved.